Hello there, and welcome back to episode 17 of Very Cool with Tyler Q. I'm your host, Tyler Q. Welcome back to the podcast, guys. On today's show, we've got my buddy Brian Kilpatrick to talk about all things Rockies, of course. That's kind of his wheelhouse right now. We'll talk some Utes football as well. It's another one of his big things in life. We're going to talk about being a dad, talking about living in Bluffdale, Utah. We're going to talk about Straight Edge. We're going to talk about the Salt Lake hardcore scene, some of the stuff that went on back in the early 2000s that he was involved in. Maybe some stories that probably shouldn't be on the podcast, but it'll be super fun. He is a really, really awesome dude. I met Brian. We'll talk about it in the episode, but I met him in like the early 2000s at hardcore shows, and I always wanted to be homies with that dude because I knew that he liked Rockies. I liked the enthusiasm that he had for like the heavy like hardcore music scene. I just kind of always wanted to be around him, but we didn't really gel as friends until kind of just barely when I kind of rekindled our friendship for the Rockies when they started getting good. They had some down times, but we still, you know, kind of weaved in and out of that whole scene or whatever. But finally I got him down to my own house to be on the podcast, and I'm actually super excited. I love that dude. He's awesome. So I think we'll get to that interview right now. So strap on your seatbelts and pop open a doozer. So let's get to it. This is Very Cool with Tyler Q. Welcome back to the podcast. We got Brian. Would you like to introduce yourself again?
Yeah, sure. I'm Brian, and I naturally make people nervous, which is why Tyler forgot to record.
I think I might actually be nervous because I've never had, like, I mean, we were close at the Bees game the other day, but you're actually in my home. It's very intimidating. You're a very intimidating individual.
I'm going to just steal all your stuff.
Except for that really high voice of yours.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. My voice is way too high to be intimidating.
We were just talking before we recorded about how Brian's kind of a big, intimidating dude, but then he shows up and he's like, "Hey guys, I'm Brian. I'm gonna kick your ass," you know.
Just sound like a cartoon character.
So instead of doing the introduction again, my buddy Brian's here. He is a sports dad. He lives in Bluffdale, Utah. He's a big sports dad. Before we get into like just the heavier topics, like I was thinking about this today. You're a big Rockies fan. You're a big Utes guy.
Yep.
What would you prefer? A Utes national title or a Rockies World Series championship?
Oh my gosh. People have asked me this question multiple times throughout the years. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure my answers change several times. Yeah. And I think it probably changes based on, my feeling of the actual chances of those teams winning. But I'm going to say right now, I think I would rather have the Rockies win a World Series.
Yeah. I honestly think it is easier probably for the Rockies to win the World Series because college football is so top heavy with like good teams, dude. It's just kind of impossible for these like meandering kind of mid-level like Pac-12 teams to really like put themselves in position to be at the top.
Yeah, and you'd think baseball would be like, because there's no salary cap, think that baseball just wouldn't be very, very level, and you know it's not a level playing field. But college athletics is like that times 10.
For sure.
Even with Utah being in a conference where it can, you know, realistically play for and win a national title, it seems so far out there from actually happening.
Like it's like Alabama, those top teams, and then it's kind of just like you have to have everything go absolutely right.
Well, and then even like remember a couple of years ago when Utah got all the way up to number two early in the season, like even then, like it just didn't feel like they were even close.
Yeah.
And so imagine, you know, how it feels most of the time when they're just hanging out in that 10 to 20 range, which is cool. But, like, you know, it's cool being a top 15, 20 program. But
it's just hard for those kind of mid-level teams to just keep success, like, at such a high level when other teams who play at a high level all the time.
Exactly.
It's just, yeah, it's just so hard.
Yeah.
So I was thinking while you were coming down, get my list of topics. I was trying to think how I actually know you. And I know you from, like, probably, like, the early 2000s kind of, like, local, like, Salt Lake scene or whatever.
Yeah.
What was your place in the scene, just kind of, like, going to shows? I know you were in a few bands.
Yeah, I was. I started going to shows, like, I don't know, punk shows and then hardcore shows and stuff in the late 90s. And then I got into, like, promoting shows because, and the reason was simple. Like, I just got sick of, like, getting on the internet on, like, Lamb Goat or whatever and seeing my favorite bands on tour and, like, none of them would ever come through here. And so I was like, you know what? I'm just going to, me and my buddy, we're just going to start asking around, like, emailing these bands, whatever, seeing how we can get them to come play here.
Yeah.
And so I did that for 3-4 years and it was super cool. And drama filled, because that's the hardcore scene.
Oh yeah,
is like the most drama filled, ridiculous bullshit you could ever imagine.
Would you say, I know when we were at the Bees game, we were getting in pretty deep about, like, kind of like pit beef and stuff or whatever. Yeah. Like, why is hardcore like that? Why is it the most dramatic of any of the music scenes, dude?
It's hard to say. Like, I mean, I guess, you know, hardcore is aggressive by nature.
Yeah.
even if you know you're a posse dude, like, it's still aggressive by nature. Like, the music, the message, everything's super aggressive, everything's super intense.
Yeah.
So that's part of the dynamic. But man, part of it's this particular environment too, like Salt Lake, Utah, you know, whatever. Like, I just, you know, people are so territorial, and people are also like, they'll do anything to avoid confrontation.
Yeah.
But then, like, that just creates and manifests, like, this ridiculous cycle of bullshit too at the same time. And things come to a head. And so I don't know, man, there's all kinds of different factors, but it's, like I talked to you about, it's something I don't really miss a whole lot.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Especially, like, I just remember I was having this conversation with another friend the other day and just how stressed out you were all the time. Like, being at shows and being in those environments, like, it was just this constant source of stress.
Well, there
and
was a lot of shows, like, growing up down here in the Provo scene, like some bands would come to Salt Lake and it's like, I don't want to go to that show because I know exactly how that show is going to turn out.
And it probably did turn out that way. And, like, I'm not trying to badmouth anybody because, like, look, that's the environment we grew up in. You know, for, you know, at the risk of sounding ignorant or whatever, like, that's just a lot of people who grew up in that environment. That's what they knew.
Yeah.
That's, you know, just being aggressive, you know, going to shows. If you don't recognize someone, like, start shit with them, whatever. Like, that's how it went. And so, you know, I'm not bad mouthing anyone per se, but it's an environment that I'm just so glad that I'm not a part of, but at the same time, it shaped who I am and probably did some good things for me as well. So.
Or, like, it was mostly just, like we were just saying, it was just pit beef. Like, there'd be kids who were, like, doing the, like, dancing stuff or, like, moshing around. And then there was kids who would, like, push pit. And it's just like,
and push pitting was not acceptable.
It wasn't
at all. Yeah.
It's so, for somebody who doesn't understand, like, a hardcore show and they see the, like, the kids moshing and then the kids push pitting, it's all the same thing. But, like, you knew if you were in the hardcore scene, like, that those are not the same things.
Exactly, because the push pitters would, like, catch. And, you know, I'm not going to be naive and say that that a lot of those fists that those kids would catch were errant. I think some, but no, but there,
an
but
errant
I've seen,
spin kick. Or
but I saw plenty of times that there was, like, an errant fist or elbow that you know, connected with a push pitter, and they'd get super upset about it. And that was always the thing that incited, like, some of the biggest fights I've ever
seen. Which is so, it's so funny. Because everyone's there for the same reason, but just depending on, like, what crew you rolled with or, like, what, it sounds so stupid, but like how baggy your jeans were. Whatever.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dude, you knew exactly what like side of the line you were at like a show, you know?
Oh, exactly. And it's and even just you had to know someone to kind of get in and like make sure that you're protected. And I'm making it sound like a gang and it's not really like that. But at the same time, like if you just kind of went to a show and you didn't know anybody, but you got in the pit or got in some sing-alongs, like you ran the place or whatever, that always caused a problem.
what bands were you in the scene? I knew you did Forget the Past. What other stuff did you do?
Yeah, Forget the Past was the like my band.
Yeah. Who was Forget? Was that you?
It was me,
Bacon?
Donnie Miller, Bacon, and my brother Ian, who and all of those guys have been in various other bands. Here, like Donnie was in Reviver for a while. Yeah. Bacon was in Clifton. My brother was in this band called Bleed So Lovely way back in the day, early 2000s.
I saw you guys a couple of times. I really like Forget the Past.
Yeah. It was so fun. It was some of the funnest times of my life. And I just remember like always being antsy to play shows. And whenever Ian or Donnie or whoever couldn't play a show for some reason, I'd always get so pissed off. Like I always wanted to play shows and always wanted to record. Like every time we wrote a song, I wanted to go record it.
Did you guys ever record on like a full length or anything? Or?
No, we just had a 5-song demo and it was like 10 minutes long. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what we were. We were just
plus
quick.
You guys had that Clifton in, so you could probably get on any Clifton show, which was always big at the time.
Yeah, and we did play. We played their CD release shows in Ogden and in Salt Lake, and both of them were just huge.
I went to that one
awesome.
At the Circuit, I think, was the Clifton one, right?
No, we might have played with them at the Circuit before, okay. But their CD release was in the venue. The inside part, so Club Sound, I guess, or whatever it was called back then. But, yeah, those shows were so fun. But And then I actually did sing for Clifton toward the end of their tenure.
Which I totally missed. I missed all of that.
Yeah, I was their final singer, actually.
How many shows did you play with them?
I played 2 shows with them. And they were both super cool. One show was just at some rocker-ass bar in Ogden where it was just like all these, you know, ridiculous people were there who weren't really into the music. But
were you
like,
after that, like, Brooklyn dude they had or whatever?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, Maddie. Yeah. Which, he's not a real popular dude for whatever
that's
reason.
That's what
but,
I heard.
But, I don't know. He's just, I don't know. He was kind of weird. But, yeah, I was after Maddie, and I recorded one of the same songs he did with my own spin to it.
Was
and
it
then recorded
beat
another
your ass
song.
For breakfast,
yeah, 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 yeah. So I recorded 2 demo songs with them, and that was fun. But I think everyone in the band knew the writing was on the wall at that point. Like, I mean, I wasn't going to be able to go on tour and stuff. And I probably wasn't the best fit for that band anyway. But it was a lot of fun the very brief time that I was singing for them.
What are some of the other, like, local bands during that time that you were super into?
Oh, back then, I don't know. I really used to like Cherim back then. I liked Aftermath of a Trainwreck. Who else was around back then?
Skeptibar. I mean,
Day 2 was kind of cool. Yeah. I didn't really like that full-length album they put out, but then they like kind of got a more technical sound, got a little heavier. I was into them.
What was their one
of what
big
they were doing?
Vlad or something?
Yeah,
right?
that Vlad song was it was on like a Ferret sample
that's
something
right.
with like 12 Tribes and some other bands, but it was so. You know, just those kind of bands. But when I first started going to shows, you know, it was Climb, Clear, Emerge from Darkness was playing back then, Deadfall, who turned into 78 Days After Death, Lazarus Project. They were awesome. They were, I think I probably went to every show they ever played here, and it was they were one of my favorite hardcore bands for a while there. But yeah, the scene was awesome when I first joined it, and it wasn't always that way over the years, but there were always some bands who carried it or who stood out from the rest. So.
What was your all-time favorite Salt Lake venue?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I really liked Deviate. I really liked the Deviate basement.
The basement
that was,
with
that's
the pole rather
just,
than the
right? It's just what I associate with.
I saw so
with
many
that time.
Good, like, mid-2000s like hardcore bands down in that basement.
Yeah, and I was doing shows down there when I was promoting shows. So I remember I did like Every Time I Die and I Lay Dying and
Scarlet.
Black
fuck
Dahlia
yeah,
Murder.
That
was show
was
really
show.
Cool.
I think Zayo and Himza played down there, right?
Yeah. Who else? Like Bleeding Through played a show down there. I remember I actually booked 6 Feet Under once, and it was it was between two other huge shows. So I think like on a Saturday it was like Bleeding Through and HIMSA, and on a Monday it was that Every Time I Die and As I Lay Dying show. Yeah. I was talking about. Well, on the Sunday it was like 6 Feet Under, Misery Signals, The Red Cord.
Hell yeah.
Which should have been a cool show, and we promoted it all on the same flyer. So I think like 500 people showed up to the Saturday show, yeah. Like 800 people showed up to the Monday show. And there were like 60 people for the Sunday one, the 6 Feet Under one, and they wouldn't even get off the bus.
Oh, shit, really?
So I remember the guarantee that I had to pay for that show was like $2,000, and 6 Feet Under didn't even get off the bus, so they didn't play, so it bailed me out, so I didn't have to pay them.
Who's the promotion company you were doing that with?
I had my own. I was doing 10 on 1 Productions, which was really ridiculous name, yeah. But it was kind of funny. 10 on 1. And then... And I did a lot of shows with Blake Ford, who's still a stalwart in the scene and a really good guy. Plays in a band called Crow Killer, who's pretty cool. But Blake and I were doing shows under Reparation.
Yeah.
Just those two.
I know we were talking at the Bees game about Mr. Ford, the big guy in red. We never actually finished that whole can we even have that conversation on the podcast?
I don't know if we should. What's the statute of limitations for that?
It's funny. We were sitting at that Bees game kind of just talking about hardcore stuff, and we somehow got into this this fiasco that happened in Salt Lake in like maybe 2004, early 2005 of this show in Salt Lake with, it was Hate Peace and who was the other band?
Diecast, right? Was the reason we were all there, yeah.
Would kind of just run through like what happened that night. Because I've never heard the whole story until we talked that night.
If I remember properly, no one wanted us there. Like, we showed up and probably just looked like bad news. It was probably a group of...
Where was this show at?
It was at the Circuit.
Okay.
It was probably a group of like 10, 12 of us.
And was that the last show at the Circuit?
It might have been. It was the last show. Well, no, that's not true. Because I guess when I was playing in Forget the Past, all those shows were at the Circuit. And this was before that. But, so actually this might've been one of the first shows there, but, a group of 10, 12 of us rolled in, and I'm sure we looked like we were going to cause trouble immediately. And so we go in and we're tearing the place up while Diecast is playing. I don't know if you ever heard Diecast. They're just super heavy.
It's been a while. A long
super
time.
Heavy. Yeah. Just like they had this one album, I think like that came out in 2001, that was just full of these long, 2 minute long, ridiculous breakdowns and gang shouts and stuff. Yeah, yeah. But so we're there tearing the place up, and nobody liked it. I think the band brought their own security, and they're, like we talked about, a lot of people don't know how to handle an environment like that. So security guards get involved, try and calm kids down, and then they
turns into a big fight.
It was a bloodbath. That ended up being just a ridiculous bloodbath. And I remember people chasing members of that Hate Piece outside into their bus and breaking into their bus. So that was basically the whole rundown is just, again, people probably being where they shouldn't belong. Yeah. And
ending up on the news.
An unfortunate situation of some band playing with a band they shouldn't have played with. And, because back then, man, those crossover shows were always trouble. Like, I remember when I booked Every Time I Die and Hope's Fall, they toured this with this band called Celebrity, who was just like this weird, like, corny kind of U2 ripoff.
New metal-y type stuff?
No, not even new metal. They just, like, they honest to God sounded like U2 or something.
Damn.
And that band ended up, like, getting beat up for one reason or another. And so, like, just crossover shows never were a good idea. And that was basically the crux of this Hate Piece situation.
I mean, if you get a chance, I'm not sure it's still online, but you can Google. It was an old KSL clip of this show we're talking about where shit just goes insane on stage. And all of a sudden, the news anchor is like, and then the big guy in red. And it's just Blake Ford like standing on stage, just like holding his fists in the air. And it's just, it's so wild. It's so crazy.
Yeah. And Blake was just singing along, doing the hardcore point, singing along to the sing along part. And I think the news anchor is like, look at this guy gloating because he just punched somebody.
And then Brian said his mom called him that night because she saw him on the news.
Yeah. Did you punch somebody? Well, sorry. That's life, mother.
So,
You did this.
Let's talk about straight edge for a second. So, when did you start being a straight edge kid?
Oh, man, probably 1996. Yeah. So when I was in junior high. And not really for any other reason other than, like, my friends were straight edge and my brother was straight edge, and it was a cool thing to do. So I'm just like, yeah, I'm straight edge, man.
Was this back when, like, straight edge was, like, getting on the news for, like, being gang-related and stuff, right?
Right around the start of it, yeah. Like, I remember there were these kids who were a few years older than me were profiled on this Fox 13.
That's right, thing. That's right.
Way long time ago, yeah, like, probably 1996, 97.
Doesn't Brian always post that clip on Twitter where it's, like, probably. It's, like, the reasons, like, straight edge and it's like anger over a glass
Is that
of
the one? Yeah. I don't know, but just talking about, like, interviewing this one dude, talking about how, like, someone whipped out a sword while he was smoking a cigarette and was waving it around and then got jumped. Shit. Like, I don't even know how much of that stuff's actually true, but it sure made for some good, like, urban legends.
So good. It's funny because I was not even into music at this point, like, but seeing that stuff on the news was like, oh, dude, this stuff's really fucking scary, you know? Like, I didn't know anybody who was straight edge at the time. So it's just like, when you hear, like you said, like, the urban myths of, like, whipping out a sword and, like, cutting this dude's head off or smoking a cigarette, it's like, wow, does that stuff really happen in Solid?
Yeah, and it's almost like that gave, you know, us straight edge kids, like, this reputation to uphold. So, I mean, I was always getting in fights at school for no good reason and... You know, like, part of it's because people would hear about it and then start shit with you. But I started plenty of fights on my own. Yeah. And which is weird because I just can't think of doing that now. Like, I can't imagine just walking up to someone and fighting them for a reason, let alone for no reason.
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, that's kind of how it was. And I think it was, like I said, I think it was because it gave us all this feeling that we had to uphold this reputation that we have. So... You know, let's just set the world on fire.
So did you think it was, like, rad being, like, straight edge? Like, were you, like, proud of it? Or, like, was it kind of just, like, everyone's doing it? Or, like, were you into being straight edge?
I was into being straight edge. Like I said, I think I joined it maybe for those reasons you're talking about, but...
Did you have a pretty group of friends who were all straight edge?
Yeah, and so, but eventually, you know, it got to the point where I was super proud of it and, like, had, you know, just... was all about being straight edge, was all about the reasons for it, the actual reasons for it, not just getting in fights, but, like, you know, being drug free, being alcohol free, all that. And I cannot imagine being alcohol free now, by the way, but you know, it was a huge source of pride. And then I remember I did this, I was in this documentary one of my best friends did in college about straight edge, and I'll say the same thing now that I said when I was in that documentary, is, like, you know, it's not a thing that's for me anymore. And you know, it did have some, there were some negative byproducts of it, but at the same time, like, I wouldn't be the person I am today without it. Like, I wouldn't have met my wife, who I met at a hardcore show. Yeah.
What would you say the negative aspects of it are?
I always had anxiety.
Yeah.
And maybe that was just my fault, you know, but I've talked to other people who felt the same way. Like, I was just always on edge, no pun intended.
Well, about what though? Just being around other people who were drinking or doing drugs and stuff?
No, not even that. Just, like, I don't know, man. It just anxiety of, like, always feeling like you have to live up to this standard that other people want you to have. Like, it's the same way in other, you know, areas of society.
I guess, like, Mormonism would be, like, a good example.
Well, yeah, probably,
of that,
yeah.
Sure,
if you, like, grow up around a bunch of Mormons and you're not Mormon and they're, like, making you feel it. But you know, I grew up around straight edge dudes and I was straight edge, so it's not really like that. It's just... I don't know, man. Like, it just always felt like there was somebody you had to impress or fit in with, or, you know, because, like I said, that wasn't exactly, like, this big melting pot for people with different beliefs either. It was just this gigantic, weird echo chamber. You know, if you go in there with different beliefs or different disagreements or, you know, reasons why things should be the way they are, and they're different from some of these other people who are maybe a little bit more aggressive or tougher or more powerful, have more scene status or whatever, like, it was just always, like I said, just a big source of anxiety. So that's really, and like I said, hell, that might just be my problem. Yeah. That might not be somebody else's problem. But I only say that because I've talked to a lot of other people who felt the same way.
Here's kind of a two-part question. So, like, how long were you straight edge for?
13 years.
And so, as you're, like, living your life, 13 years being straight edge, and your friends are, like, kind of dropping out, like, what are your thoughts as your friends are, like, breaking edge?
I never held selling out against anybody.
Really?
There are things I did hold against people, such as, like, snitching or, you know,
just being rats, overall shitheads or whatever.
Like, you know, or people who got, like, you know, just became completely different, weird, shitty people. But never did I ever hold it over anyone's head when they sold out. Like, I always, you know, I always thought friendships went deeper than just that label of being straight edge. You know what I mean? So I, like I said, there were some people who sold out who I grew to hate for other reasons, but not just for that.
So, like, is your pool of friends just like, I mean, you're still friends or whatever, but like your straight edge friends are just kind of like dropping left and right. Like, when did you finally decide to like, this is not for me? When did you finally break edge?
I think I started.
Or sell out, I guess, yeah.
I think I started deciding, you know, that maybe it wasn't for me like 4 years before I actually like started drinking or whatever.
Did you drink before you were straight edge or anything?
No, not like... Like, I used to take sips of my dad's beer. But, you know, I was 13 when I started being straight edge, so I never got into partying or anything. And, like, I remember... But, yeah, like, I used to take sips of my dad's beer. And then I remember, like, me and my stepbrother smoked some resin out of one of our parents' weed pipes, like, and thought we were super cool about it. Like, so we were, like, 12 at the time. But, no, I never, like, actually... drank or got drunk or partied or anything until I was 26 years old. And I think, you know, if you think about it, that was probably a good thing because, you know, waited until I was mature enough to handle it, know what I was doing, and didn't get addicted to anything, despite how earlier I said I can't imagine my life without alcohol. But you know, this is my first beer in like 36 hours too, so I'm not addicted at all.
So like, but, what was your first experience with like selling out? Like, how did it go down?
I was just hanging out with some buds. Like, I remember I went to a jazz game and I was just feeling like super like, man, I want to party. I just want to let loose, like whatever, you know. And by that point, you know, most of my friends had sold out and were already partying a little bit. And
were you one of the last like kind of holdouts, or like were there still quite a few kids left?
I don't know if I was one of the last, but that's really hard to say though too, because so many of my friends sold out right around that same time, like within a month or two, you know, before or after that. I just remember I went to a jazz game, was just hanging out, like having a good time, and I just decided to have a beer at the jazz game, have another beer, went to a bar afterwards, got super hammered. It was a good time, it was awesome, it was fun. And it's like, yeah, man, this is, I don't know, it's cool. It's cool to be able to do this.
Did
every
it feel
once
like a
while.
Weight like off your shoulders, like, or was it just not a big deal?
I don't know that it was really that.
That sounds
deep.
Like a weird question. Yeah.
Yeah. No. It wasn't. I just like I said.
You said you were feeling like anxiety and stuff about it. Were you finally just like, all right, this is just what I do now?
Yeah. Well, like, sort of, but I don't know. I don't ever remember like having it be that big of a deal. It just kind of happened. And like I remember though, after I got drunk that first time, I don't think I drank for a few weeks after that. And like I just was like, you know, it's cool, but. Where it took me several months to actually decide beer was good. So, you know, but yeah, it was just a fun time. It was, and it happened organically. I think it, you know, it wasn't forced. It wasn't, you know, just, it was time.
How many of those kids are still left being edge of your, like your homies?
There's a bunch. And I don't talk to a lot of those guys anymore, but you know, there's some of the few who I still talk to and run into and you know, I'm still acquainted with or whatever. Like I would say, you know, more than half of those guys are still holding strong. So good for them. but the ones who I was super close to and remain good friends to this day, for the most part, aside from like, you know, two or three or four, all of them are all sellouts.
Sellouts, man. Yep. That's funny. It's the group of kids that I grew up with being straight edge is like, there's maybe, we didn't have probably nearly as big as a group as like you guys did, but like, it's like me and like maybe a few other kids, man. They're all gone. Everybody's gone. It's weird. Like you said, it's just, you get to a point in life, like when you get to an age where you're like, I think I can handle like being like having drinks or whatever, you know,
yeah.
like when you're a kid, you're just like, your friends are doing it, so you kind of just do it. But then I was talking to Nick about this because he had been straight edge for like a little bit or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, what finally, like, when did you stop being straight edge? And he's like, well, when I got old enough to like decide for myself that I can handle drinking alcoholic beverages, yeah, or whatever. You know? Let's move on to, let's talk a little bit of sports stuff because we're your sports dad. Like
I
you
am
said.
A sports dad.
You're a big, yes, Utes guy.
That's just who I am now.
You're a big Utes guy. Did you go to the University of Utah?
No, I've been enrolled, enrolled in classes, but have not graduated.
Yeah.
So, no, I I need to do that.
Yeah. is Utah football your favorite Utah sport?
Well,
you're big basketball, so, kind of basketball.
Yeah,
too,
so
right?
Utah basketball was my first love. You know, it's, I remember when I was 10, 9, 10, 11, going to games, maybe even younger, going to Utah basketball games and just, you know, super fun. Back when they were super good under, when Rick Majerus was coaching them. So yeah, they were my first love. I remember like, I think I still have some Polaroid picture of, when they had players take pictures with kids after the game. And I remember I was there with my brother and I chose to get our picture taken with this dude, Phil Dixon, who was really good, but he was hurt.
Yeah.
It's like, no, this is the guy we've got to get our picture taken with. And so we did, but you know, who else was also on that team as a freshman? It was Keith Van Horn.
Hell yeah.
So we didn't get our picture taken with him. And I'm pretty sure my brother wanted to, cause he had a real good game. So, yeah, we blew that one, but yeah, Utah basketball was always my first love. And,
I remember watching their run to the finals. Was that 96,
98,
right?
98 when they went to the championship.
Did they lose
game.
To Kentucky, right?
Kentucky, of, yeah, course. They lost to Kentucky in the tournament like 6 times in the 90s. It was so frustrating.
That was a rad team. That Andrew Miller Utes were really,
yeah,
really fun to watch,
and
dude.
Like Michael Doliak. And
that's right.
That
Doliak
team had like 4 or 5 NBA players, yeah, on it. Because I remember there was this dude, Hanno Metola, and Britton Johnson. Yeah, there were like 4 or 5 NBA players. And then
is Andre Miller still in the league?
No, he finally retired like 2 years ago.
How long was he in the league for? Almost 20 years, right? A
I
long
think
time.
He was, yeah, probably. I think he was in the league for probably 16, 17
that's nuts,
years.
Dude.
Yeah, close
he probably
to
made
that.
A good grip of money for being in the league.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
And, you know, he was never like a great player, but he hung in there and was a good role player, especially toward the end of his career.
Who's your favorite Ute basketball player of all time?
That's a really good question. Probably Andre Miller.
Nice.
Yeah, just because of how good they were when he was there, and you know, Van Horn wasn't on that championship game team. But
who was he originally drafted by?
Van Horn or Andre Miller?
Andre Miller.
The Cavs.
Oh, damn.
He was like the 8th pick or something, and it was like, was it 1999 or, yeah,
was
99,
Van Horn
I
the
think.
Nets?
Van Horn was he drafted by the Nets? Yeah, he might have been drafted by the Nets and then traded to the Sixers or vice versa or something. I swear he was. He didn't play for the team he was drafted by.
What about Doliak? He was good. He was a way good U, right?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was on that championship game team too. And I think he was like a top 10 pick too, and he won a ring with the Heat, and he was in the league
that's
for
right.
like 10 years.
Damn, that's
so,
right.
And I don't really think he did much in the NBA, but he was, you know, he was on a lot of rosters and clung on for a while. So all of those guys, man, like it was just a cool time growing up and watching those guys play. And then I always liked Utah football when I was younger. I didn't get real into them until during the 2004 season.
Oh,
when
really?
They were
damn.
Making
okay.
that when they were making that undefeated run. I mean, I always followed them, always knew a lot about them, always. I mean, I remember in 1994 they almost went undefeated. They screwed the pooch against New Mexico And then, but they ended up finishing like still number 10 in the country, and they had like two losses that year. So, I mean, there were good years growing up, but I didn't get real into them until that season. And now it's just, now I'm just cursed.
Do you have season tickets?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I am a big time season ticket holder.
You got a Pac-12 sticker on your car?
No. Dude, I'm not Larry Scott, so I do not have a Pac-12 sticker on my car.
I know you always, that's one of your big Twitter.
That's
things.
One of my brands.
Tell me about that brand real fast, because I think it's a fascinating one, dude.
Just, man, I cannot stand dudes with Pac-12 with stickers, like, on their cars.
It's so weird to be a fan of, like, a conference, dude. It's so weird.
Can you imagine?
Even SEC dudes are like, it's the stupidest thing ever.
But can you imagine, like, driving in LA and seeing USC fans having a Pac-12 sticker on their car?
Absolutely.
That's
not
what I'm saying. It's just so, and all they're doing is just rubbing it in BYU fans' faces.
They're
just trolling BYU fans.
So here's a scenario: if BYU was to get into the Pac or the Big 12, do you think they probably wouldn't roll around with Big 12 stickers, right?
No. I honestly can't see BYU fans doing that. Yeah. I really can't.
But is that really what it boils down to? Is just Utah fans just sticking
that in
BYU
fans? It totally is. And to their credit, it kind of works, because I know of a lot of BYU fans who just hate it. Just despise that Utah fans roll around with Pac-12. I've seen dudes with like giant wraps on the side of their cars with a Pac-12.
What do you think about that sign right as you get off the freeway? That's like, welcome to Big 12 or Pac-12 country. Like,
it's totally to troll BYU fans.
This is not Pac-12 country, dude.
No, it's
we're not even close to anywhere to the Pacific Ocean. Yeah. Dude. It's so stupid.
I mean, it's cool that Utah's in the Pac-12 and I was super excited when it happened and all that, but you know, a lot of things, such as my wallet, kind of wish they were still in Mountain West.
Yeah,
but you know, it is big time football and big time basketball. And
I really, really miss some of those old like Mountain West like showdown games.
Oh, I totally do. Like playing Wyoming was always
playing,
fun.
Like TCU and all of those.
New Mexico was always a pain in Utah's ass.
Air Force,
like,
dude,
even up until the end.
Air Force was
always a pain too, man. Like, yeah, always. Like in 2004, Utah. I think they played one game that was closer than 21 points, and it was against Air Force, and they beat them by like 14. Air Force always gave them problems.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, it's big time money football, but it, like, just having some of that tradition just totally wiped off the face of the earth is such a bummer, dude. Like,
it is.
Even the fact that BYU Utah, like, it's coming back, but it's not really around anymore. Is like you said, some of those like Utah-New Mexico game, Utah-UNLV games, stuff like that. Like, you just miss those older foes now, you know?
Yeah, I was actually kind of stoked when Utah announced that they signed a home-and-home series with Wyoming. Yeah. I thought that was pretty
cool. That's awesome.
Cool.
I think that's way sweet.
You know, you should try and play some of those teams instead of San Jose State every other year, or Fresno,
sure,
or
yeah,
whoever. Like, you know, if you're going to – because they have this scheduling model that they do where they play, like, you know, they play an FCS team and then they play an FBS mid-major or whatever, and then a marquee opponent, which was one of the big reasons why they shut the rivalry off with BYU, is because BYU's not the kind of marquee opponent they want to play, but they're also better than, you know, a mid-major like a San Jose State or whoever else they play. But,
like Elon or some weird.
Yeah, but like if you're playing, you know, San Jose State or Fresno or whoever, like why not just play some of those old Mountain West foes instead? You know, why not play UNLV, New Mexico?
Because you know the fans are
going
to be way more excited to see some of those older guys come back to town.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It would be a lot of fun if they did that. So I am glad the rivalry's back on, though, because at least that – Like you said, it's back. It's not all the way back. There's weird stuff with basketball, too.
They're playing the BYU game in Vegas now, right? Isn't that where it's at now?
For basketball? No, they're playing – what it is they set up a four-team round robin, Utah State.
I saw Jimmer was involved with something, right?
Oh, I don't know what that is.
I don't know what I saw the other day.
But no, they're playing like an in-state little tournament round robin type of thing, I think, at the Vivint Smart Home Arena, and that's how Utah will play BYU if they play, at least for the foreseeable future.
So where is Utah football at right now, as far as like where are they going?
They're going to have a little bit of a rebuilding year this year. I think they lost. They had like 8 players drafted and another 8 who signed as free agents with NFL teams. So they had, you know, they lost 16 players to the NFL. And, you know, Alabama and USC and Oregon, well, when Oregon's good, they can probably afford to do that, but Utah can't.
Yeah.
There is a huge infusion of talent now in that program, but, you know, I think they're going to struggle for a year to overcome some of that loss of talent because that's just, I mean, losing 16 players to the NFL is just huge.
How much longer do you think Witt stays around for?
Well, I think he's just signed an extension through like 2021 or 2022. This was just like last week, I think. So he'll be there at least that long. I don't see them ever being bad enough to where they would fire him. Man, this game is getting out of control.
We're kind of like
Arizona just got tacos.
Yeah,
oh my
reverse tacos.
But I don't think even in their rebuilding years he'll ever be bad enough to where they'll want to can him. Like I bet they'll go 6-6, 7-5 this year. Yeah. Worst case scenario. So, you know, he'll be there for as long as he wants to be. And
back to the Vegas Bowl.
Yeah.
What was the one they went to last year? The Emerald?
They went to the, well, it was basically the Emerald, but whatever it's called now. God, I can't remember.
Who they play? Indiana, right?
Yeah.
Did you go to
Foster
that game?
Farms Bowl? No. I've been to one bowl game. Yeah.
Did you go to the BYU Vegas
Bowl? No, I went to the Boise State one. It's the only bowl game Utah's lost in like the last 20 years.
It's been a while, yeah.
Yeah, that is the only one. I think their last bowl loss other than that was in like 1996. So, yeah, it was, of course, you know, they had to lose that one.
Staying on football, we'll take it to NFL real fast.
Oh, God.
This is actually something I'm really interested to talk to you about is like, you don't have a team, right?
Not really.
But you are a Broncos like hater,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, gun to my head, I might be a Cowboys fan, and that's just because my dad is, I kind of liked him in the 90s and in their heyday, but, you know, I'm not.
Take some time to just unleash on Broncos fans real fast.
Why do you think the Rockies are your rival? They're not. They are a pro team who plays in the same city as you, and you should have a lot of the same fans. They're not your rivals. It's not... You know, it's not, it shouldn't be Broncos season in June, and it's not. And yes, you're a Broncos town, but there's room for other pro teams in your town, you know. So just listen, Broncos avatar guy with a goatee and a stupid dad hat, but not even like one of the good stylish dad hats, just one of those stupid
the ones
with
from,
like lines all over it and piping and shit.
Or the ones you buy from Walmart or something. Like
yes,
the Walmart
listen,
and rifle
stupid Broncos avy guy. Like, it's okay for other teams to do well and to reside in your city, which is a great city, but come on.
Besides trying to run parallel with, like, the Rockies, like, is there any other reasons you just despise the Broncos, or is that pretty much...
I never liked them, and they were always on TV, like, when I was growing up.
You didn't
up,
grow up
I
as
just,
a Broncos fan
no.
just being in the, like, the TV area or whatever?
No, like, I didn't like them, and I don't know, like... I know my mom always used to talk shit on John Elway for some reason, and so, like, I wonder if that's part of why I never liked him. But I just always remember, I mean, they were the Buffalo Bills before the Buffalo Bills.
For sure.
And for whatever reason, I just always thought that was super funny.
Are you even an NFL fan in general at all?
I watch it. I play fantasy football. I have a
normal Sunday. You have like Red Zone on.
Yeah,
like
probably the guy who's my best friend is a huge Patriots fan, and so like I, you know, I'll get with him and watch games and whatever. Like, kind of token root for the Patriots for him. Although I do definitely take the Patriots side in the Patriots versus Broncos
That's a
rivalry.
Bad call, my bad.
So
such
you know,
a
hey,
bad call.
You know, I. Just whatever it is, you know, my hatred of the Broncos is just it's always going to be there, even though I'm not a huge NFL guy and definitely like not a Raiders or Chiefs fan. I just don't really care for them. Yeah. So it is what it is, I guess.
You're a jazz man kind of though, right?
I'm a total bandwagon jazz fan or fair weather or whatever you want to call it. Like I only have time to devote to the Jazz when they're good. I freely admit it.
Which
I,
is
I don't
fine,
care.
Dude, because like, it's hard to get behind a team when they just like, they're just not good, dude. It's not fun to watch
bad
basketball.
Yeah, I do that with these guys. Yeah. Like, you know, I've watched them be terrible for 7 years, so I don't have, I don't like the NBA enough to do that with the Jazz.
Let's, since we're watching this bad Rockies game right now.
Oh, man. It's like 8-1 now. Yeah.
Let's where did you first get into Colorado baseball? Were you there as at the inception of 93 or like...
Yeah, basically. So I remember cuz I grew up like I really liked the Canada teams when I was little. The Blue Jays and Expos were my two favorite teams. So I was super stoked when the Blue Jays won the World Series in 92 and 93, even though by then I was a Rockies fan, but I remember just being stoked when they announced the Rockies like in 91 that they were going to be an expansion team cuz you know, I knew Denver was, you know, pretty close to here. Yeah. So I was just, like I said, I was a huge baseball fan when I was little. So
you play Little League and do all that
yeah.
stuff?
Yeah. And so I was excited to have a team, you know, even within striking distance of here. And then I remember the Rockies were actually on one of our local stations. I think it was like Channel 12 back then or something, which was just a no-name garbage station.
Can't remember
but
that.
But the Rockies games were on that station. And so I remember, like, seeing their home opener, watching their home opener on TV. It was on here on one of the local stations. And then in May of 93, my dad and my uncle took me and my brother out there to see a Rockies game. And that was our first big league game.
In Mile
so,
High, right?
So my brother and I both kind of became Rockies fans at that time. But it stuck with me, whereas he started liking the Indians and then followed Manny Ramirez to the Red Sox. And but I always just stayed a Rockies fan.
I really like that. Early 90s Indians team.
Oh, they were
Albert
super
Bell, Jim
good.
Tomey,
oh,
yeah.
Man, they were great. But
I loved Albert Bell. I was a big Albert Bell guy.
Yeah. Oh, that he was my brother's favorite player. Yeah. I think I still, because, you know, I ended up with all of our baseball cards when we were younger, and I think I still have his whole Albert Bell collection. It was just gigantic. But, yeah, I remember when I went out there, the Rockies played the Phillies and lost two games by a combined score of 24-1.
Oh shit, really?
That was when those Rockies were at their low point, because they did, I mean, they sucked that year. I think they went like 68-94 or 67-95, but it ended up being one of the best expansion years of all time. So but that was like their low point. They were just awful. I think they were like 25 games under 500.
Were you stoked or I guess did they have Walker and Galarraga the first season? Because they were Expos players, right?
No, they had Bichette and Galarraga. I was stoked that Galarraga was on the team, because I remembered when I was an Expos fan a few years ago, he was actually pretty good for them.
Who was your favorite player of that, like, initial, like, early 90s, like, lineup?
Of the early Rockies? Yeah. I liked Bichette a ton.
I was a big Galarraga guy.
But then I became a huge Larry Walker fan. Like, he dwarfed all of them in terms of my fandom. And then I loved Todd Helton too, but yeah, Larry Walker, if we can include him in that category,
for sure.
He was by far my favorite. Cause I also kind of started to realize that Dante Bichette wasn't that good.
No, he just had the fist pump. And
yeah,
that was
I think like
it.
Maybe sometime around like 97, 98, when I started to pay a little bit more attention to baseball stats and stuff and like, you know, what made guys good. I kind of noticed that Dante Bichette just wasn't all that good.
Where did he go after the Rockies?
I think, did they trade him to the Reds, or did he sign as a free agent? I can't remember. He went to the Reds.
I can't remember what team he went to.
He went to the Reds, and then he played for the Red Sox briefly, too, toward the end of his career.
And then they got, Walker went to the Cardinals, right? Galarraga went to the Braves.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, the Rockies.
It's kind of weird to see that like early 90s team kind of just stop.
Walker hung around for a while because they traded him in 2004. And it was mostly just a salary dump.
It was that he played for that long with them?
Yep. Yeah, they traded him right at the deadline in 2004. And it was mostly a salary dump, but they used the money to sign Dexter Fowler.
But he never ended up winning a title with St. Louis, right?
Did he win? No, he didn't.
So,
he went to the World Series with him in 04, and then he played in 05, but he wasn't on that 06 World Series championship team.
How did you start getting into writing for the Rockies?
Just when I was going to school, and before I had kids, I was married, I remember, but didn't have kids yet. We were living in my wife's parents' basement, so I was holding up the stereotype there.
Blogging in mom's basement, dude.
Yeah, I was just kind of bored and like, you know, wanted to do writing, and I always had an interest in writing for
sure.
But
did you initially start Purple Row?
No, okay. No.
Tell me about the genesis of Purple Row.
Okay, so Purple Row was started in 2005 by Rocks Girl, the infamous Rocks Girl. And many people think...
Who is Rocks
Russ,
Girl?
Many people think Russ Oates is Rocks Girl, but I can confirm they're not the same person. But Rocks Girl's not around anymore. She does, like, she's like a playwright.
Yeah.
So she's super involved in, like, playwriting. I think she lives in Cincinnati or something. But she started Purple Row, like, right as SB Nation was getting going. Like, I think Purple Row was one of the first SB Nation
really?
Baseball
cool.
blogs, if I'm not mistaken. And then she brought on Russ shortly thereafter. And then when I started writing, her and Russ were running the site. And I remember I started writing this series called Rocky's Retro, and it was just like, you know, profiling old players. Cause you know, at that time I was kind of more interested in writing about the older players, even though the Rockies had just, you know, gone to the World Series. Like I still,
so when did Purple Row start? 08?
05.
Yeah.
So I started writing with Purple Row in early 09. And then the Rockies went to the playoffs that year. It was super cool. But I didn't do a whole lot on the site for the first few years that I was part of it. I did, like, my rock pile every Saturday morning and, you know, an article every here and there other than that. But mostly I just wrote one article a week, and it was mostly just a link dump for a couple years. And then once there was some turnover at the top of the site, like Rocks Girl turned it over to Russ, and then Russ turned it over to this dude, Andrew Martin, and then he couldn't run the site anymore. And so I was running it with this dude, Jeff Abbey, for a while, just trying to keep it going. And then eventually I just decided, hey, I'm just going to take this over. And
where you became the boss.
Start doing what I want to with it and taking it in a different direction. And so here we are now.
Yeah. How did, at one point, I don't know if ever, I'm not really sure how it happens, but at what point did you get, like, the blessing of, like, the actual Rockies?
It's actually a really easy thing to me to look back to. What it was I wrote this scathing article about Rockies PR because it was in 2012, so the team just sucked.
Yeah, they were in the...
They were just dog shit in 2012, man. And everybody knows it. Like, if someone with the Rockies is going to listen to this, I mean, I'm not afraid to say that. They were just dog shit bad. Everything was going wrong. But, like, you know, I never really cared about that. Like, I still, you know, I mean, I was still writing about the Rockies all the time. Like, you know, looking forward to the future. Could see things were going to get better at some point, whatever. I could deal with the losing. That was the point. But I remember, you remember the Aurora Theater shootings?
Yeah, of
that
course.
Happened that year.
The Batman. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Peter Burns was a radio host in Colorado, and he was friends with one of the people who got killed in that shooting. And so he had a hand in the foundation for her, that was started. And Michael Kadire had donated a pretty significant amount of money for it. And so Peter Burns was trying to have Cuddy come on the show to talk about it. And the Rockies said no. So, nope, you've been critical of us, so we're not going to allow Kadire to come on the show. And so that, you know, that's what I was told at the time. So I remember Peter Burns, you know, saying that. And then me and Andrew Martin and some of the other Purple Row guys having this internal discussion. Well, you know what? Like, I'm sick of this shit, man. Like, you can suck as bad as you want and be 40 games under 500, but, like, you're embarrassing yourselves. You're a public relations disaster. And that was the title of the article. And I just wrote this big scathing article about Jay Alvis, the Rockies PR director at the time, just saying, like, I mean, what kind of operation is this where they suck so bad on the field and they can't take any criticism and they're, like, cutting off people's access because they're critical of the team. And I remember I didn't even like Peter Burns that much at the time because he was one of the people who started that stupid Road to 100 movement. But, like, I respected him for what he was doing for that foundation and everything, and it just really struck a bad chord with me when I heard that the Rockies denied, you know, Cuddy being able to go on their show for that foundation.
That's
so
pretty lame. That's a really
So I
really
ripped
stupid.
Him good, and I said, hey, and I realized by doing this, like, and it was more of a throwaway line, like, but it really resonated with people. But I said, and I realized by doing this that, you know, my dream of covering the Rockies professionally one day is probably not going to happen because I've been ripping, you know, I just wrote like a 3,000 word article trashing the PR guy, but whatever, man. Like, it's better than the alternative, you know? And he called me like an hour later.
Oh, damn, really?
Jay Alvis did. And kind of shed some, I mean, look, I still think he was mostly full of shit and got, you know, the real reason was probably because, you know, they were critical of the Rockies, but he told me that, you know, Peter Burns once called Dick Monfort, Dickless Monfort or something. It's like, come on, like, I can see being upset about that, but even still, like, you know, whatever. I mean, Monfort was the heel of Denver sports for a long time. So, you know, if that's the worst thing you got called, then whatever. But at the end of our call, he said, you know, I'd like to have, you know, you or your guys from Purple Row come out and cover, you know, maybe one game a homestand or something.
Right. Hell yeah.
Just to show that, you know, because in the article I said the Rockies were just stuck in the past and they had no idea, you know, how the world was working at the time. Their social media department was just garbage. They weren't doing anything that way. Twitter was awful, whatever. We can obviously see the strides they've made there. But then, like, because, you know, I wasn't really on this huge crusade to get bloggers in the press box. Like I said, it wasn't my intention, but all of a sudden they invited me to come cover some games, and then we got in the press box and some other blogs followed after that, and now it's just kind of the way it is now. So I don't want to give myself too much credit, but, you know, it was just kind of cool that I got to be the first one, you know what I mean?
Open the door for it to, like,
yeah,
like you said, get the blessing or whatever.
But I could kind of see even at the time that, you know, I mean, Jay's writing was on the wall as far as being the PR director there.
Is he gone now?
Yeah, he got fired at, like, you know, when O'Dowd did, and the Rockies
cleaned house pretty hard.
Cleaned house and restructured their front office. And even back then, I wrote an article about it, but back then I knew that the whole dynamic around the team was changing, and you could really see what the groundwork that was being laid for the future. So it's just, I always like going back in hindsight and looking at all that, because, you know, you could see, if you were close enough to see the changes being made, and it was just cool.
So I've had this kind of same conversation with a lot of people who are Rockies fans. Like, 07 really brought a lot of people, like, back to the fold.
Yes.
Because from, let's say, 95 to 2007, they were not very good, you know?
No,
like,
no.
Not at all. So was 2007 kind of like an opening for you to get back into the team?
What was funny is I started getting into them, like, late in 2005. They were terrible, and they finished, like, and that was one of their worst seasons ever. Because
there was a while for me, maybe, like, a five-year period where, like, I just didn't,
I
didn't watch them at all.
I tuned out for most of Todd Helton's prime, which
for sure,
sucks. I mean, I still paid a lot of attention, and I still liked him.
They were always on your radar, but you just never...
And I always followed what he was doing, but I didn't, you know, I just, for the most part, was kind of indifferent to what they were doing.
Like, it wasn't worth your time to get Comcast to watch Rockies games.
Exactly.
You know?
And so I remember late in 2005, like, part of it was probably just how my life was going at that point, but I was just starting to get super back into sports and whatever. And I remember watching the Rockies on TV late that year and being like, man, this team kind of sucks, but, like, you can almost see some of these young players, like, because that was right in the heart of the Todd and the Toddlers era. But they were calling up, like, Matt Holliday
was coming up
at that point, and Atkins was up and playing well, and they were calling up guys like Spilly and Brad Hopp and whatnot. And you could see that, you know, it's just kind of a team that was coming together. And then I was really into them early in 06. They got off to a hot start. They were in it. They were in first place, like, early in July that year. It wasn't a great division, but you know, they were in it until the All-Star break. And so I got super into him that year. And that 2006 team is still one of my favorite low-key one of my favorite Rockies teams.
Tulo, like, not yet, right?
No, he got called up in August of that year. Okay. But you could really, really see things gelling that year. Like, you could see that, like, damn, Aaron Cook's kind of good and Jeff Francis is kind of good. Yeah, like, this is, you know, they might actually have some pitching. And then, you know, all those other guys coming up. And I remember I was bummed when they traded Jason Jennings that offseason, because he was probably their most successful pitcher up to that point.
At that point,
But I still kind of – I thought the 2007 team would be good, and that ended up being the year that I finally went out to Coors Field to catch a game, because I hadn't been there since my parents took me to Mile High.
Gotcha.
Or my dad took me to Mile High. So I think in April of 07, I finally went out to Coors Field to watch a game. We went out again in August. And
I remember 07 was maybe one of the first times I interacted with you, maybe on MySpace.
I remember that. Yep.
It was the Padres game, right? The super, yep, super long one, right? Like the 22 inning game.
That was in 08, but I,
was it 08?
But I remember, yeah, I interacted with you back then.
Cause I'd seen you on MySpace every now, mm-hmm, and then in like a Rocky sad or like talking about Rockies and stuff. So,
yeah,
but 07 was like, it's just so fun to remember like how good they were,
yeah,
or like
crazy.
Just that run was like that early, like the late September run where they won, like it's like 21 of 22, yeah, or whatever. Right.
But even early in the season, you could tell they were going to be good. Like even those April games I went to and they played the Padres, they lost the Saturday night one I went to. But I remember the Sunday game, they beat up on Greg Maddux and Matt Holliday had a super good game. And like, I can't remember who
Greg Maddux Padre is a weird thing to think about.
I can't remember who pitched for the Rockies that day. I know Francis pitched the night game we went to and he lost. But whoever pitched for them that day pitched super well, and it was just like, dude, things are coming together. It might have been Jason Hirsch, but you could just tell things were coming together. And I remember in June they swept the Yankees at Coors, and like Tulo hit some homer on a pitch in his eyes from Roger Clemens. He hit it like 500 feet. It's like, okay, these guys are, you know, these guys might be legit. And I remember they had a terrible road trip that almost buried their season, but they you could tell that year, even before the 21, yeah, out of 22, that they were a good team.
The playoff run was like so wild to watch. Just sweeping every series was so awesome. And watching, was it Eric Burns, right? Like try to slide headfirst, yeah, into first base at the very end was, because he had talked shit on them that entire series, right?
Oh yeah, he's just saying, yeah, so I know hard. We're the better team. These guys are just getting lucky or whatever.
And like, was he like talking shit on like the black vests who were like they wouldn't let him wear them?
Yeah. There was,
right?
Yeah, there was some game where, the D-backs wanted to wear their black jerseys at home because you know they probably wanted to calm the Rockies' momentum a little, and so. So the D-backs wore them. The Rockies wore their gray jerseys and still won.
How many of the World Series games did you go to? Did you go to any?
I didn't go to any of the World Series games. No. I wish. That would have been awesome.
If you could go back in time and like fix that whole World Series, like what is like the main, I know they had like 9 days off, right? Mm-hmm. Like, is that, like if you could go back in time and fix that whole situation, like where did it go wrong for the Rockies getting swept in the World Series?
I just think the American League was so much better than the
was
National
that moment
League
just kind of like
then.
Too big for them at that moment
it
or what
probably was. I mean, I think the layoff is a little overrated.
That's pretty nuts to have that many
no totally and games, and it makes sense for the reason, because obviously they were so good and so hot before that. But you know, I back then especially the American
like
League
you
was
said,
just
the Red Sox were just a fucking buzzsaw at that point.
Yeah,
dude.
The American League was so much better than the National League. And, like, you know, I remember going into that series, I didn't think the Rockies would get swept, but I didn't think they would win either, yeah, just because, like,
it
dude,
if
the
I
Red
remember
Sox
right, it wasn't competitive very at
not
all.
Not really
right?
at all. Yeah. The Red Sox were fucking monsters, yeah, man. I remember Holliday hit a 3-run homer in game 3 that kind of got the Rockies back into it a little. And then game 4, they rallied late. Like, Hop hit a homer. And I think, like, Atkins almost hit one later in the late innings. But, it was really never competitive, though. I mean, they lost, like, 13-1 in game 1, and that was about it. And game 2 was close. But it never felt close, like, because the Rockies couldn't do shit on offense. And
just watching that shithead Papelbon, like, close it out was, like, such a fucking bummer, dude. I hate that dude.
No, dude, I hate Papelbon so much. So much. I try to think about what it would have been like if Twitter would have been around back then,
yeah.
But I mean, obviously Rocky's Twitter would have went ham, but like I probably, one of my brands definitely would have been hating on Jonathan Papelbon
and
his butthole mouth.
Ugh. I guess we'll segue into like Rocky's Twitter for a sec. Like Rocky's Twitter is like, it's really fun right now. It's fun.
Yeah.
Like, what are some of your favorite parts about Rocky's Twitter? Who are some of your favorite dudes on Rocky's Twitter?
Well, you have to love MLB insider Dinger, yeah, for sure, even though he's a Dodgers fan. Dude's just phenomenal. And
was he actually, like, bummed he didn't win the Twitter tourney? Like,
it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Maybe. I also kind of think Purple Dino Cast is a little bit bummed, too, but... For the record, I did not rig anything. It's not possible to do that.
What exactly happened with, like, what happens in the Twitter polls at, like, the very, very ends like that? Because every
I think
be
it's
like
still 50, I think it's still tabulating
just still
votes,
calculating.
Yeah, it has
voting.
To be. So, and then it seems to me like it's probably 20, 30 votes behind at all times. So that's what I think it is. Like, when you're just getting so many people voting, it's just it's still calculating
stuff.
Do you
think people were, like, pretty bummed that a tournament that Purple Row put on ended up winning the actual tournament?
I'm sure people thought that we were up to no good or whatever. Yeah. Maybe shouldn't have been seeded a number one, but really, did the seeds matter?
Yeah.
No, I don't. No. I really don't think so.
Who are some of your, like, sneaky favorite, like, Rockies Twitter dudes?
Dan Lucero.
Dude, I love.
Definitely one of them.
Dan is awesome,
he's,
dude.
Like, low-key, super funny. Yeah.
Do you listen to his podcast ever?
I don't know.
Yeah. I wish he'd bring it back, though.
Truth be told, I don't listen to podcasts. I would make a brand out of that on Twitter if it wouldn't offend so many people who I like so much.
Well, I'm just glad that you came. You decided to come on the podcast and discuss. So that was very nice of you.
I don't listen to podcasts, and I can't give you a good reason why. I don't really.
What are some of your favorite Rockies Twitter memes?
God, all of them are just great. There's been some that I've never really gotten into. Like, I've never participated in the David Dahl doesn't exist one. I think it's funny.
Yeah.
And I like it, but that's just one I've never really gotten into.
Yeah.
I don't know. Even though it's losing some luster, John Elway's birthday will always be funny to me.
Is it? John Elway's actual birthday is coming up pretty soon, right?
Yeah, and I've got some plans, some grand plans for that.
Where did John Elway's birthday even start?
So as far as I know, it started from this dude, his Twitter handle is actually @fart. And he, just randomly tweeted, he's just like a dude, like he's not part of Rocky's Twitter or anything. He's just like one of those weird Twitter people, kind of like Drill or whatever.
@fart.
But he just tweeted one day, he's all, just big shout out to my good friend John Elway, it's his birthday day, but it was in like fucking March or something. And I just retweeted it because I thought that shit was hilarious for some stupid reason. And then I just kind of started doing it from there.
Yeah.
And then it really took on a life of its own.
What are some other good Rockies brands, Rockies memes?
Well,
Tacos is taking off.
Yeah. Tacos is huge. And then just, I like how just everyone has their own brands, though. Like, as much as he pisses me off sometimes with all of his subtweeting, like Nick Tremorelli's always got super good brands. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, everyone's. Connor, I wish he would do the MLB Insider Shanley brand.
Talk about Dan the Man for a second.
Oh, Dan the Man's good, too.
Is Dan the Man a real person?
As far as I can tell, because he started on Facebook and then he went to Twitter. As far as I can tell, he's totally real. And I don't know
what's the newspaper clip you like sent that one day? It's pretty genius, dude.
It was funny. I was just I was sitting in a hotel room in Evanston, Wyoming, and the Rockies had that was the start of their downfall last year. They blew a game against the Marlins because their bullpen was so bad. And everyone was having a meltdown, and Dan the Man had a huge meltdown. And, this is months of
breaking
him.
Breaking news,
this is months of. This is maybe even, like, more than a year of him just being like, any news on this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy getting fired? And I'm like, well, you know what, I'm just going to I'm gonna entertain him. So I found this stupid newspaper clipping template that I actually first saw on Lambgoat, the Lambgoat message boards way back in the day. And just used that and wrote it up. And that thing still gets retweeted all the time to this day.
That's funny, dude. So good. We're almost to 69 minutes, dude. You were very
nice.
Very nice to be coming down and giving me your time. We'll just end on, like, where you have seen this Rocky season go so far and where you see it going to the end of the season.
Well, I picked them to win like 84 games, so I knew they were going to be better than they were last year, and most of that was really just organically. Like, the bullpen could not possibly have been as bad as it was last year. That was like a fluke. They were like fluke bad. And then just like, because it wasn't even really like the acquisitions that I was really that sold on. I mean, Holland's obviously been awesome, but I didn't expect this out of him.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't expect a whole lot from Desmond, and that's kind of manifesting itself right now. But I just thought all these young players were good enough to take steps forward. And even if some took a few steps back, like there's just so many of them. Like they had like seven awesome rookies debut last year. So I figured even if four of those guys get better this year, like that's going to help things. Yeah. So I thought they'd be about 10 games better. And turns out they're
20.
Probably a lot better than that. And with all these rookies in the rotation, like you gotta expect some outings like tonight. Like Hoffman got his ass kicked apparently tonight. Which you had to see coming because he's still, you know, a lot of these guys still lack command. Like they don't have real good command yet. Yeah. They all have really good stuff. Even the guys who don't strike out a lot of batters, but it's just command and it's trying to learn how to deal with Coors Field and the different movement on pitches and stuff. So like outings like this are going to happen, and I think the Rockies are probably going to tell off a little bit. But dude, they've got 21 wins in the bag right now.
It's awesome.
So they could go like three or four games below 500 the rest of the season and still finish with 90 wins. Yeah. So I don't see any scenario where they don't reach the postseason. I don't think they're going to win the division. The Dodgers are too good. Their depth is unfair.
The Diamondbacks are really damn good.
And the Diamondbacks are really good too.
It's kind of just sucks that the Rockies are playing the best baseball they've ever played, but it just so happens two other teams are also like playing insanely good.
And I don't know how well the Diamondbacks rotation's going to hold up either. Yeah. Like over the long run, I mean, they look good right now too, but I think they have some of the same issues with guys who don't have great command. And
the Dodgers
like,
have
an
that
experience,
freaking kid coming up right now who's just killing everything.
Oh, Bellinger. So the Dodgers right now are actually kind of fulfilling my worst nightmare, because when they hired Andrew Friedman to run things, I kind of thought, man, he's going to run these guys like the Rays and like find all these diamonds in the rough and like
for sure
all these market inefficiencies and stuff, but he's going to have the money to go. Because here's the thing, how this works. Like, it's not like, I mean, the Dodgers have a ton of money, but it's not like they're going to go sign every free agent for $200 million. But what's going to make them really good is they're still building from within for the most part. And like, you know, they have a good farm system. They have good, like they're really good at player development. But what's going to make them so good and what's going to make that money matter is they're going to be able to go get a bad contract from another team of a role player who can go there and help fill holes when somebody gets hurt or whatever else, or just needing extra guys in the second half. They're going to be able to go get whoever they want in a trade. And that's what's really going to make the difference, and we've already kind of seen it, and it's just not going to be real fair with those guys. But you know, it's still, there's never a bad time for your team to get good, even if the Dodgers are going to be a force to be reckoned with for a really long time. Like, you know, the Rockies can be right up there with them, and if some things go their way, maybe one or two of these years they can win the division. I don't see it happening this year, but it matters because of the wild card thing, but at the same time, this year it doesn't matter because the Rockies are ahead of schedule, and even getting to that wild card game would be a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, big victory. We'll close down with some quick rapid-fire questions that I just thought of that I'll throw at you real fast.
All right.
What is your favorite Cave-In album?
Jupiter.
Are you a big Perfect Pitch Black guy?
It's okay.
That's their last album, right?
No.
I think it is.
Is it? Yeah. Oh, so no, I really like, there's a song on there called White Noise and then Seeing My Loves is really good too. Is that Perfect Pitch Black?
Pitch Black is the singy, super, super, super singy one with that trepanning song.
No, that's not their last album.
Is it not?
Okay. Cause yeah, they had one after that.
Maybe it was
they had an EP after that. And then they had another full length after that.
Rapid Fire usually turns into like really long. Yeah.
The Perfect Pitch Black was cool, but
cause that's my favorite Cave. That's probably my favorite Cave.
And I remember just being super stoked that they came out with that album, after a couple of years of just like not being sure what they were going to do. So,
who's your favorite Ute football player of all time?
It's got to be Eric Weddle, man.
Gotcha.
That, I mean, he might be one of the best safeties of all time in the NFL, too. So how good he was in college to transition to how good he is in the NFL, I mean, it's hard to go in another direction there.
Who is your least favorite BYU player of all time?
Wow, that's a good one. Least favorite BYU player of all time. Probably Austin Colley.
Good call. That's yeah. probably a good call. Get either that or Max Hall, probably, huh?
Yeah, but I just feel bad for Max Hall yeah, for now, sure. So I don't know.
What is your favorite all-time Rockies jersey? What's your favorite Rockies jersey?
The purple.
Purple?
Yeah.
The new shade or
the new shade?
Shade.
The new purple is so good looking. Good. Like, this is, like, whatever. So you've got it right here on your couch, which that, is yeah. great. This makes for great radio, blue. By the way. Anyway, he's got the old Rockies purple, which just looks blue, and he's got it over a blanket that's like the new purple, and
it's
you can just
really
tell the difference.
Weird, like, you never really thought about it
no.
until they changed. You're like, holy shit, that's actually, like, pretty
yeah.
blue. It's
yeah.
pretty wild.
And on TV at night, it especially
like Ryan said,
blue.
This is bad radio yeah. talking about colors. What's your favorite all-time favorite hardcore show you've seen?
That's a really good one.
If you even want to nail it down to like two or three.
How could you do this to me? There was, so just for a lot, like, so I saw Candaria and VOD, and that was a really good one. You know what I'm going to go with, even though it's kind of a little newer, but not necessarily, is when I saw Poison the Well and Martyr AD at Kilby Court.
Nice.
That show was nuts.
What era Poison the Well would that have been?
It was after right after they released Opposite of December.
Yeah, so still super heavy.
Yeah, Poison that well. Show was nuts, man.
What's your favorite? What is your favorite Rockies meme?
It's not really a meme, but my favorite Rockies meme right now is just still making fun of people who, the party deck crew. I love to make fun of the people who, but we still have a party deck, those people. That's,
yeah.
So is it a meme? I don't know. It probably could have been
yeah.
made into a better
yeah, yeah.
meme, but that's my favorite meme.
What's your favorite beer?
Coors Heavy.
Nice. What is Coors Heavy?
It's just Coors Banquet, the yellow can of Coors.
The banquet beer?
Yeah, and like I like, because I'm not a huge fancy beer guy, yeah. but so, I don't know, like just a beer that I can like just always sit down and drink regardless of the situation, Coors Heavy.
What's your favorite Salt Lake restaurant?
I like to eat at bars.
Yeah, what's your favorite?
I like Poplar, man. I really do. Like, their burgers are just so good. Their wings are awesome.
That food at, was it Green Pig, right?
Yeah.
The food there was fucking
good.
Really
I shared some of your nachos, I remember,
dope.
With you and Bud Black. but yeah, just, and like Lucky 13 has awesome
oh,
burgers
dude,
and stuff.
Yeah.
So like, just, I mean, you could probably ask me this question a few months from now and it would change. But right now I'm just super into just like bar food, like burgers and wings and shit.
Nice. Before we shut it down, you want to tell everybody where to find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at PurpleRowBK, where I share lots of different musings. But I do most of my Rockies tweeting at PurpleRow. I tweet about the Rockies a lot from both accounts, but I try and keep most of the Rockies stuff to at PurpleRow. And they both kind of reflect my personalities in a way. So
awesome.
That's where you can find me. And then PurpleRow.com.
Perfect.
Definitely. We have a thing called put it on the site because we tend to put too much stuff, just do too much stuff on Twitter and we don't do enough stuff on the site.
Yeah, yeah.
So I should have said the site first, but yeah, go to the site, purpleRow.com.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you coming on, my man. I know you don't really make a lot of Utah County trips, so.
I don't at all. I hate Utah County.
It's weird that you were down here like a few weeks ago and I was like, dude, just come over. You probably never come down, but you just couldn't make it happen.
Yeah, it was too tight of a window, I
yeah.
think, with getting back to the kids and stuff, but I'm glad I came down today.
Last question. What, okay. besides obviously coming down to do, to come down to the podcast and discuss, what would be any reason you would actually come down to Utah County for? Can you see any reason why you'd come down here?
If I was a single man and I wanted to meet a wholesome girl,
yeah.
who, I'm not, yeah.
It's, yeah. It's good enough reason.
No, you know, I've heard there's like lots of good places to eat down here, and I'm pretty fat,
yeah.
and I like food, so I might have to make that happen one
awesome.
Day.
Sweet. Well, I appreciate you coming on, my man.
Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
All right, see you later. Hell yes. A huge thanks to Brian Kilpatrick for coming down to Orem. I know a lot of the Salt Lake people, they don't really come down here a lot, which is weird, I guess, because I go up to Salt Lake all the time to do stuff, but it's like, it's funny to just wonder why nobody comes down here. I don't know. Sorry. Maybe I'm the only reason people are going to start coming to Utah County to be on the podcast. But anyways, a huge thanks to Brian, and a huge thanks to you guys for sticking around for another kind of baseball-heavy podcast. I know that's kind of the only thing I talk about these days. Like I said, if you follow me on Twitter or Instagram, that's pretty much, you know, my sweet spot right now, just because the Rockies are having a good season. And it's just fun to kind of like interact with everybody involved in that. Brian said you can follow him on Twitter at PurpleRowBK. You can also follow the blog that he writes for, Purple Row, at Purple Row. I think he's on Instagram too. You can follow him at The Old Grizzly Bear, I believe. But also you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler Q in Utah. I'd like to give a shout out to the podcast service that I use. It's called Buzzsprout. It'll give you stats of like how many listens you have, where the listeners are coming from, even like what devices they listen on, which is kind of weird. But if you're listening to this podcast in Europe, because I'm not really sure who my European friends are out there, if you want to hit me up on like the tweets or an Instagram like DM to like let me know who you are so I can give you like an actual shout out on the podcast, that would be way sweet. I know there's also some people in Japan. I think I know who it is. But anyways, if you would also like to hit me up, and so I can be like, yo, how's living there and listening to the podcast overseas in like a time zone that's like 95 time zones away. But anyways, shout out to everybody in America who listens to the podcast. We're going pretty strong. It's weird. I'm seeing the back catalog of, I guess you can call it the archives. They're getting pretty strong. I think Spike's episode is at like 200 listens, which is crazy because I don't even know if I know 200 people. But anyways, that's pretty sweet. I can see all of the older episodes kind of gaining steam. And as they get into like the new episodes, like I said, go back and listen to the ones with Hayden. The last one I did with Gilga. We've got Nick and Salsa on there as well. Also, some of my favorite ones were with Jacqueline, who came on to talk about the thrifting stuff. Who else was on? Me and Micah did that early 2000s hardcore episode, which was super fun, which is gaining a lot of steam too. Go back and listen to Randy, of course, everybody's favorite, the snowman. But anyways, shout out to anybody who's still listening to the podcast. I really appreciate it. We're still going strong. It's been super fun to do. I'm going to have some awesome guests on soon. But anyways, like my buddy Dwight says, very cool. Thanks, guys.
Cool. Very cool. Cool. Very cool. Cool. Very cool.